Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSilicast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, December 7th, 2014, and this is show number 500. I have to say, I am overwhelmed at the recordings you guys sent in. Some are funny, some are heartwarming, some are crazy, some are incredibly creative. Basically, a perfect cross-section of the NoSilicastaways themselves. I'm going to sprinkle the listener contributions throughout the show, probably a few at a time. If you're new to the show, note that this particular episode is not very representative of what we would call a normal show. It will be fun, but it will not be our normal tech-filled show. There will be some tech sprinkled in, but it probably won't be the focus of the show. By the way, I asked Siri this afternoon how many weeks have elapsed since May 13th, 2005, when I started the show, and it's 499.3. How's that for accuracy, huh? 500 shows in 499.3 weeks. I guess I missed one. Anyway, let's start out with a contribution from Steve Davidson, followed by one of the most notorious characters on the NoSilicast.
Hello, Allison and Castaways. This is Steve Davidson. Allison, congratulations on reaching an impressive milestone. Allison and I met through a professional association, and I liked her style. So when she mentioned to me that she had a podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias, I couldn't resist listening, and ever since then, I've been hooked. Thank you, Allison, for creating a community, for educating us, for entertaining us, and for introducing us to a wide range of interesting personalities and a few characters along the way.
Well, speaking of interesting characters...
Hello, Allison. This is your old friend, Professor Albert, and I just want to congratulate you on 500 episodes of the very best podcast in the world, the NoSilicast. And because of this, I have written you a new theme song, and I'm going to sing it and perform it for you today. And from now on, you need to use it for your podcast. Excuse me, I have to warm up. Me, 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 me. This is Professor Albert getting down with the hip-hop beat. She does that NoSilicast every week, but she plays in the chat room like a super geek. Dumb questions, reviews, it goes way beyond, as she talks with Bart from across the pond. Week after week, she does that show, and she even gets Steve to talk video. It's the NoSilicast.
Well, only you, Professor, only you. I'm not sure the listeners are quite ready for your new theme song, but perhaps I'll save that for April Fool's Day. Well, George from Tulsa sent us in a really, really cool book to celebrate our 500th episode. It's a giant hardcover coffee table book called Iconic. It's a photographic tour of the history of Apple, and it's absolutely gorgeous. Like I said, a perfect coffee table book for the geek. I put in a link in the show notes over on Amazon so you can point your family right to it to buy it for you. George, you rock. While we're mentioning little gifts, Kevin, big in Virginia, sent me an encrypted thumb drive. I mean, how awesome is that? These are good geek gifts. I just love it.
Hi, Allison. This is Kirshen from freerangecoder.com. Congratulations on podcast number 500. That's a really great milestone. Thanks so much for all that you do in the NoSilicast with all that tech information. We know it's so lovingly crafted, and there's a lot of effort put into what you do. Wishing you all the best for the next 500. Once again, we'll see you all in the bitstream.
Hi, this is Barry from Chicago. Greetings, Allison, Steve, Bart, chit-chatters from across various ponds, and of course the phenomenal NoSilicastaways. Congratulations on show 500. What an amazing feat. I am very thankful for all you've done to support the Apple community. And to show my thanks, and since there's no Macworld next year, I'm inviting all of you to my Midwest Mac Barbecue on June 20th, 2015 in Chicago. Yes, all of you. And if you can make it, ping me via MidwestMacBarbecue.com. Hopefully I can get a link to that in the show notes. Hey, it only took me 500 shows to get in there.
Well, thank you so much, Kirshen and Barry. By the way, Barry is not kidding about inviting all of us to Chicago for a Mac barbecue. I talked to him this week about it, and he's going to advertise this on a bunch of Mac shows to make sure we get a good showing. I think it's kind of ironic he's doing this because Barry is actually notorious for simply showing up at places like Liverpool or my front yard. So it's about time we went to him. I put a link in the show notes to his website. It's MidwestMacBBQ.com. We will be advertising this quite often, I imagine, between now and next June. But be sure to check up over there. We're going to put up some RSVP stuff and get everybody excited. Book your flights now.
G'day, Alison. It's Doug Ingram from Sydney, Australia, wishing you a big congratulations on the Silicast number 500. 500 shows. What a milestone, or a 1.6-kilometre stone for us metric people. I'm sure there are so many other messages to listen to today, so I don't want to take up too much time, but I can't pass up recognising and thanking someone who continually adds to my canon of knowledge of things Macintosh, iOS, tech in general, photography, car waxing, blah, 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 and so many other interesting and helpful topics. Did you see what I did there? Canon of knowledge? You being a Nikon and Olympus kind of gal? From listening to around 400 episodes of the Nasilicast, there are so many things that I've had you clarify for me, even when you didn't know I needed to know them. I'm using software that you've recommended over the years that has helped me to be more productive and more knowledgeable in my job as a tech support provider. My clients sometimes thank me for creating tutorials that help to clarify the steps to solving their problems. When they thank me, I always mention to them that I use an application recommended on a podcast that I listen to. You know, that application that helps you to clarify things so that people aren't confused by technical explanations. I can't remember what it's called, but you know the one I mean, from the Blue Mango guys. It's embarrassing that I can't clarify this more. Man, turning 50's really messed with my memory. My doctor might have something to help me clarify my memories a lot better, but until then, I'll have to hope that you know the program that I mean. Anyway, thanks for... Oh, I think I remember it now. It's called Screen Steps, the Next Generation, isn't it? Wow, just thinking about you helped to clarify that for me. Thanks so much for all that you and Steve do by putting out the Nasilicast. You guys give so much of your time, your thoughts, your efforts, and of yourselves in so many ways. Not to mention how you're giving up your retirement years. I'm sure you know you're appreciated, but I have to say it again. Thanks for all that you do. Again, congratulations on the Nasilicast number 500. You guys don't look a day over 100. Doug Ingram, Sydney, Australia. P.S. The last time I sent in some audio for you guys, I said that I'd have to cut down on how long I took between submissions. My last one was 4 years since the previous submission. This one only took 2 years. See, I'm getting better. That's a 50% improvement, just to clarify that for you.
Okay, Doug, I appreciate the puns, and I definitely appreciate the metrics on your improvement in your scheduling, and I hope you can bring it up another 50%? Anyway, I hope you do contribute again, and it's so nice having you along for the ride. Well, let's take a little bit of a break from the 500th celebration and do a little bit of tech talk. This week, I had two appearances on other shows that were both a bit unusual. Tuesday morning, around 11:30, I was puttering away when I got an email from Jason Howell of Twit asking me if I could be on MacBreak Weekly, like, now? Luckily, I had a nice shirt on, and I just lit a fire in the fireplace. You know, the temperatures had sunk into the low 60s, so it's appropriate, of course. So I said, yeah, give me 5 minutes, and I'm there. Turns out, Leo had the flu, Alex was unavailable, Renee was on vacation, so it was Andy Anatko holding down the fort, with Serenity Caldwell subbing in for Renee from iMore.com, with Mike Elgin as the host. I really do like to have four people for a real panel, so I got drafted, and I had a blast. Now, I know Leo's an acquired taste, and I do personally like him on a lot of shows, but on MacBreak Weekly, it's really, really hard to get a word in edgewise. Mike Elgin is not Entertainer of the Year, but he has an interesting attribute as a panel host. He throws the ball to the guests, so I actually got to contribute. I embedded the video over on podfeet.com. If you want to jump to where I was on, it's about 22 minutes in. Before I tell you about the second appearance, let's hear from three more Nosilla castaways.
Hey, Allison. Donald here from Otakuno Podcast. Congratulations on your 500th show. Being a podcaster myself, I know how hard it is to put together a show every week to, you know, figure out something to talk about, you know, get people to send in contributions, arrange interviews, and so forth. That's quite a bit of work, and you know, you do it so well. And myself, I thank you, and I'm sure as all the rest of the Nozilla Castaways thank you as well. And I'm honored to be a part of it all, with my various reviews, as well as my chit-chat across the pond appearances, which I hope to continue. You know, I keep thinking back to that one fateful day in 2007 at the Blogworld and New Media Expo when we met at that BIOS booth. Now, I'm by no means a morning person, which is kind of surprising because I believe the time that we met at the BIOS booth was actually kind of in the morning or, you know, late morning hours. And the funny thing is, you know, I actually thought about sleeping in a little that day. And if I had, well, then I wouldn't have met you, and maybe I wouldn't have become a Nozilla Castaway and a contributor. It's funny how things work out like that, huh? You know, call it fate, call it divine providence, pure coincidence, call it random chance, whatever. Still, it's kind of funny and kind of cool how the universe works that way sometimes. Anyways, I am so glad we met that day, because not only did I meet a really cool new friend, but I also found an excellent podcast. Again, congratulations on 500 shows, and here's hoping for 500 more, or even more than that. I'm definitely going to stay subscribed.
Well, Donald, I have to say, I am amazed at your memory. You not only remember the year, but you remember what time it was when we met? I do remember standing at the BIOS booth and you and me discussing if we should lay down some cold hard cash for some audio plugins from BIOS. I'm so glad we had that chance circumstance meeting too. It certainly has turned into a beautiful friendship.
Hi there, this is Terry Austin from IntelligentElectrons.com. I'd like to take a moment to offer my congratulations to Allison and Steve as they reach this new milestone, the 500th episode of the Nozilla Cast. Thank you for all you do for the Mac community. Personally, I switched to the Mac in 2009 and I've never looked back. I discovered the Nozilla Cast early on and with guidance from Allison and the Castaways, felt right at home with my new Mac. I was fortunate enough during Macworld 2013 to meet Allison, Steve, and many of my fellow Nozilla Castaways at the Castaway Party. Once again, you all made me feel right at home. I could wax poetic about all the awesome things I've learned over the years. Instead, I'll just say that Allison and everyone associated with the Nozilla Cast embody the best of what makes the Mac community so very special. Thanks for the first 500. I look forward to all that's yet to come.
Well, if you've ever gotten an email from me in the last couple of years, you'll notice I have a cute little drawing of the pod feed in my signature. Those were drawn by none other than Terry Austin of iElectrons during a session at Macworld. Thanks for sending that in, Terry.
Hi, Allison. This is Todd Olthoff, and I just wanted to congratulate you on your 500th NozillaCast podcast. What an incredible accomplishment that you've been doing it for that long. And I want to thank you for all your hard work on this, because I've personally enjoyed the podcast and all of the things that I've learned from you and all the other contributors. It's incredible, and I'm excited that you've reached this milestone. I also want to thank you and Steve for all of your hospitality and the way that you've created this welcoming community around the NozillaCast. I remember meeting both of you actually at Macworld at the Nozilla Castaways party a couple years ago. And I just really enjoyed that entire experience the last 2 years, meeting all kinds of wonderful people and just having a blast there. So I appreciate you guys a lot, and I appreciate all that you do. And again, congratulations on your 500th episode, and I look forward to the next 500.
Well, thank you, Todd. One of the best investments we've ever made was in throwing the Nozilla Castaways party at Macworld. Talk about a return on investment. Man, so many new friends. Remember, we do get to go to Chicago on June 20th, 2015 to Barry's house for the next Mac party. Don't forget, put it in your calendars. I don't want to hear any weak excuses like it might be race weekend or I might be in Alaska, Dorothy, that kind of thing. I don't want to hear it. You got 6 months notice. So I want to see you guys all there. All right, let's get back to a little bit more tech stories here. The second appearance I had this week was not a surprise, but it turned into even more of an emergency. Tom Merritt and his producer Jenny Josephson had asked me way in advance if I could be on the Daily Tech News show on Wednesday at 1:15 p.m. At around 11:30 a.m., why was it 11:30 both days? Steve and I were puttering away on our computers as we do when we saw the lights dim. And then our computer speakers started making really loud noises, you know, that kind of noise you don't want to hear. I unplugged my Mac from my monitor that gives it power immediately. We both ran into the spare room to shut down the Drobos, one of which was on a UPS, which was still up, and the other was on a surge protector, which, sadly, the Drobo had gone down. I knew I had to get ready to be on Tom's show, so I decided I'll just go downstairs to make lunch while this power thing settles out, because these things just settle out quickly. Normally. When I turned on the overhead fluorescent lights, they came on really, really bright. I mean, really bright. Then they started making this weird crackling noise, like it sounded like somebody was rustling paper up above my head. We noticed the refrigerator was making weird noises, too, and so was the intercom system. On the other side of the house, though, the lights were just really wimpy. You know, the phones were going, beep, oh, I'm off, beep, I'm back on, oh, beep, I'm back on. Anyway, we have lights up our banister with a garland, and they were really dim and sort of pulsing as though they could barely keep up. Steve went back upstairs and yelled to me that he smelled smoke. I dashed up after him. In retrospect, it occurs to me I probably should have brought one of the three fire extinguishers we have in the house. No, I just ran up because I'd be able to see it and know what to do. Anyway, I ran upstairs to meet him and found the entire upstairs smelling of burned electronics. Now, I have a pretty good nose, but for the life of me, I could not isolate which room had something burning. As we later figured out, it was because many of the rooms had things burning. Every single surge protector upstairs was burned out, and there was a concerning black mark on the power cord from our airport extreme. I do think it's important to point out that during all of this, our $150 each Nest smoke detectors were quiet as church mice. Thanks. Anyway, that's when Steve, my trusty electrical engineer in the house, whipped out his voltmeter and started checking some measurements. Now, in the United States, a normal outlet should show 120 volts AC, and we have two lines coming into our house. When he checked the kitchen, he discovered it was at 200 volts AC. Now, that explained the other room being weak because it was reading at 40 volts. Get it? 200 plus 40 is 240 instead of 120 and 120. So this was a bad thing, he said. Steve killed the breakers for most of the house, as it was clear this was getting to be a very dangerous situation. At this point, it was pretty clear to me that I was not going to make my schedule of 1:15 p.m. to be on the air with Tom, so I called my good friends Bill and Diane and asked them if I could come over and borrow a cup of internet. I raced down there, it was only about 20 minutes away, commandeered their den, hardwired into their 100 megabit per second internet, stole a monitor, and I was in business. Tom was pretty happy that I'd made it work, and we had a great time. By the way, we had a great conversation about the new Google Capture program. They've implemented a new idea that is supposed to be able to tell you're a human without you having to decipher one of those annoying squiggly letter thingies. We talked about how this will work for the blind and those with motor control disabilities, too. I posted the link to the Daily Tech News Show number 2378 in the show notes so you can see it now. I didn't really want to go home, because it was kind of like the house of terror there, but Steve was stuck there all alone with Tesla in the dark, so I figured I'd better go. After I had a cup of tea, of course. We kept the power off till around 8:30 p.m. when Steve thought it would be fun to do a site survey and find out how many houses were in the dark from this situation. We already had talked to some of our neighbors and knew it wasn't just us. We'd heard from another neighbor that 19 homes had been affected. When we were on the block behind our house, we saw a Southern California Edison truck and two guys carrying a ladder coming back from behind our house. We cornered them, explained we were engineers, so we wanted to know exactly what happened. They had just finished the repair, and they said it was a separated neutral at the transformer, which caused the two power phases to split into the 200 and 40 volts AC instead of the usual 120 and 120. They told us that if we had any damage, we'd have to file a claim with SCE. We went home and flipped the breakers back on to find out the damage, or as I like to call it, carnage. Earlier, the surge protectors were burned out as we suspected, but the good news is that every single thing that was on a surge protector survived. Even the black mark on the Airport Extreme card turned out it was just from the surge protector itself. The older UPS for one of the Drobos had also burned up, but both Drobos were okay. That was a big relief. Steve had his iMac on a UPS too, and it was fine, and the UPS actually did survive the giant fluctuation. Downstairs in the room of 40 volts, everything was fine, but the other side where it was 200 volts was not so lucky. The electric garage door opener died, all of the ballast for the fluorescent lights were burned out, and we lost the microwave oven. Now, you wouldn't think that's not a big deal. My daughter Lindsay bought a desktop or a tabletop one for like $45. But no, our microwave oven was built into a wall oven. They don't make the microwave anymore, they can't replace it, and they said you can't repair it. So we had to buy a whole new oven. I really, really, really hope Southern California Edison pays off on our claim. So the reason I told you this story was to make you happy that even your cheap little surge protectors might just save your electronics. I mean, these weren't big old honking. Well, some of them were big old honking really cool ones, the ones I'd gotten from Tim. But some of them were like $8, $12 little surge protectors. And, you know, these things did their work. I think that it's a good idea to take a look at anything you have that's expensive and put it on a surge protector. I can tell you that when the new microwave goes in and the new garage door opener, we're definitely putting in surge protectors. Let's take a break before our next set of contributions to talk about our newest sponsor, Hover. Remember how I said I was going to move my domains this week? Well, between the power outage and some other commitments, I didn't do it yet. But I promise I will do it next week. I can prove it because I even have a little sticky note and I'm showing it to the live chat room right now. So I am going to do it. I have to tell you, I was worried in one aspect. What if I have time left on my domain registration with the old company? How does that work? What do you do? Do you have to wait and perfectly time when you move your domain? Well, you don't. It turns out you basically buy a one-year extension from Hover and you don't worry about it. It just flips over when the time comes. You never lose the time you already paid for with your previous company, so you can move when it's convenient for you. When you have a great idea, even if you're not ready to pull the trigger on it, buy a domain name right away before it's taken. If you go to hover.com for your domain, you'll be in and out in just a couple of minutes because your interface is clean, it's uncluttered, their explanations are concise, and there's zero upsell. I mean it, nothing. There's no upsell. For example, if you pick out a name, you get free Whois privacy. That's so people can't look up your home address. I mean, that's pretty important stuff, right? So you go in, you buy it, boom, you're done. If you're new to Hover, you can get 10% off every domain you register with them this month by using coupon code PODFEET12. If you forget the code, it's embedded in the Hover badge on podfeet.com right now in the right-hand sidebar. Just push that big Hover button and you'll be in. By the way, I've gotten feedback from a whole bunch of you about how much you already love Hover. I got to tell you, even Bart likes him. Bart, you know, he hates everything. All right. I chose the order of the next four contributions. This order is very, very specific. So let's get started here again.
Hello, Allison and fellow Nasola Castaway members. Mike McPeak here. 500 episodes, that's quite an accomplishment. I know for me, contributing to two podcasts takes a fair amount of time. And then for you to have to do the editing and the production and having to keep that sausage-making operation of yours going all the time requires a lot of hard work. I'm sure there's times you were wondering if all that hard work was worth it. Well, I'm here to let you know what it's meant to me. I don't remember when I first started listening to the podcast, but I always heard you say at the end to come join the friendly Nosilla Castaway members in the chat room. So one day I did, and it was a warm and friendly group of people that I met there. One of the first people I met was this chick from North Dakota who kept calling me Chippy all the time. With me living in South Dakota, we had something in common and struck up a friendship. This chick was named Julie Keel. And from that friendship, I came to be part of the Sci-Fi Tech Talk podcast with Julie and Jeff Sawyer. Also, that first time in the chat room, I met this goofball who thought he was a big thing in Virginia or something like that. At first, I just thought he had an ego problem, but once I got to know Kevin Alder, I realized he's actually kind of a cool dude. And from that friendship, I joined Kevin and Mark Greentree on The Geekiest Show Ever. So I have you to thank for my introduction to podcasting. And for the rest of the world, it's Allison's fault. Your podcast has meant more to me than just being able to join other podcasts. Like the bar in Cheers, this is a place where I can go where everybody knows my name. Being the token nerd in my town, I have to take the time to explain to people what it is I'm talking about. But not here. I can walk in and start talking about the things I know and like, and I can have some pretty good conversations with people who understand what I'm talking about. It's like I finally found my tribe. And this has meant a lot for me, and I will always be grateful to you for it. I haven't been in the chat room as much as I would like lately because sometimes, well, life just gets in the way. But I'll try to get in there a little bit more often and talk to Kevin about that strange lady in the corner who's talking all the time and about how the sausage is being made and whatever other non-tech subjects we can come up with to talk about on any tech-related podcasts. So congratulations on 500 episodes. And here's the 500 more. Now, pardon me while I go to the back of the room and start making some more spitwads.
Well, Mike, I know exactly what you're talking about. Sometimes it's really hard to be us in normal company. You know, I make these friends and they're perfectly lovely people, but they're just not our people. You just can't start into the geeky stuff right away. The good news is that when I go to parties now, though, everybody walks up to me. In fact, three women at this barbecue I went to came up and said, "So I'll say on my iPhone, I'm running iOS 8 and I'm having this problem." So people are starting to come into our fold, but it's not the same as just being home in the chat room.
Hello, New Silica Castaways, Wingman Steve, and oh yes, Allison. Anytime you do something for the New Silica Cast, you have to start with a problem to be solved. That problem is how best to thank and congratulate Allison for reaching such a major, major milestone in podcasting, as well as all she has done to build an amazing community around the podcast. I guess the best place to start is to begin with how warm and welcoming Allison is to new people who wander in. Just like me when I wandered in back in March of 2009 to the live chat room for the very first time. Everybody was so welcoming, talked, didn't shove me aside because I was new to the show. It was great. I was originally attracted to the show because I loved the way Allison delivered the content. She does it in a way that is both entertaining and informative all at the same time. The content speaks to the uber geek, like myself, or at least I like to think I am, and the technology newbie all at once. Let's also not forget the sense of community that she has built around the show, and that she and Steve fostered for the group, lovingly referred to as the New Silica Castaways. Thanks, Rose. One of the best terms I've ever heard coined. I think what has meant the most to me is the friendships I have formed through being involved in the community, not the least of which are Allison and my ever-present wingman, Steve. They have shared more kindness than I could have ever imagined, not only being a friend to me, but to my entire family. I can't forget all the friends I have made by association with the show either, not to mention without her encouragement, I would have never been brave enough to jump in and begin podcasting myself. Because of the show, I met my longtime partners in crime, Mark Greentree and Mike McPeak, through the No Silica Cast, and we now have our own show. But I'm not going to talk about that. I've met so many other amazing people from all over the world that I now count among my friends. I have friends from Perth, Australia, to Sweden. It's an amazing community that I'm now a part of. I would try to name all these people, but I'm afraid I'd forget somebody, and that would make me feel awful, and I don't want to do that. But let me just mention that even the poor and oft-maligned Switcher Mark, despite what Allison may say, is truly an amazing guy. Well, I think I've rambled on long enough. Just in closing, let me say a huge congratulations to one of the most amazing, kind, and caring people I know, Allison. It is a huge accomplishment to get to 500 shows, and I look forward to the next 500 shows. And please be sure to continue on with your ever so slight Macintosh bias, and we will continue to enjoy all that you do for us. Until next time, this is Steve's Wingman, a.k.a. Big in Virginia, Kevin, signing off.
Well, I love having Mike and Kevin's stories together, even though Mike was kind of snarky and Kevin was lovely to Mike, but I like it because they do interweave so perfectly. Neither of them mention the show name, though, that they have with Mark Greentree, because guess what? These guys are awful at marketing their show, so I'm going to do it for them. It's called The Geekiest Show Ever at geekiestshowever.wordpress.com, and of course there's a link in the show notes, so go check it out. Thank you, gentlemen, and I'm so glad we all found each other. I'm again astonished that Kevin can remember exactly when he got into the live chat for the first time. Kevin is really the center of the live show. On the rare occasion when he can't come, it's not the same. By the way, if you remember the great Mipples kidnapping incident, Kevin was the one behind stealing my poor little defenseless horse from when I was a child. Since Kevin mentioned the much maligned Switcher Mark, I guess I'm forced to play the recording that Mark sent in too.
Hi, Allison. This is Mark Pauly, also known as Switcher Mark, and I just had to take a minute to congratulate you on reaching your 500th episode. I realize this is a pretty big milestone as podcasts go. Heck, 500 episodes is a lot of anything. But it doesn't really surprise me that you've accomplished this. A lot of other podcasters run out of things to say, or they get tired of talking and give up. But we all know that isn't ever going to be true for you. God, do we know it. But seriously, congratulations and thank you. I don't feel I can say that enough. Thank you for bringing us great content every week. Thank you for sharing so much of yourself with us. And thank you for being the glue that holds this great community together. I promise not to tell people how nice you can be.
Well, Mark really is a sweetheart, but he's also the reigning champion of snarky comments to and about me. I have to say, though, there is a contender on deck. Let's hear from him now.
Who? Oh, that awful woman. Do I have to do it? I have to do it. All right. Just read the script, is it? Okay, I'm ready to start when you are. Okay. Hello, Alison. This is Steve Harris, creator of Feeder at Reinvented Software, and I'd like to congratulate you on 500 episodes of the NasillaCast podcast. Yes, 500 episodes. Amazing. Thank you also for using Feeder for almost 10 years now. It's always been a pleasure dealing with you. So I should add something else. Okay. I first remember meeting you. No, I first remember avoiding you at the Podcast Expo in 2005 and subsequently managing to avoid you for another 5 years until running into you by accident at a meeting with Don McAllister in Liverpool in 2010. And that was, of course, a pleasure. So congratulations, and here's to another 500 shows. Yay! Okay. Right. Don't forget to edit that bit at the beginning out.
So I will never forget meeting Steve Harris in Liverpool. So I found out that he had driven a long ways. We'd been talking on and off all evening long, and I found out he'd driven a couple hours to go to this meetup. And when Steve and I went to Liverpool, and I said, God, I can't believe you drove that far to see me. And he said, well, I didn't. I came to see Don. Yeah, he's a good fan. I feel okay, though, because I gave Steve, I think, $30 for Feeder 10 years ago, and I haven't paid him a dime since. And let me tell you, I guarantee you, I am his most annoying user, that's for sure. Well, the penultimate contribution is coming up, and it's very unusual in a few ways. John Bachman sent in this contribution. Now, I said at the beginning that the contributors represented every type of Nocilla castaway, from the silly to the sincere. John then represents the silent masses, those of you who haven't yet sent anything in, but are nonetheless loyal listeners. He's also done his contribution as a musical tribute. Now, I don't mean to say that Professor Albert wasn't musical, of course, but this is something really amazing. Anyway, here's John Bachman's wonderful contribution.
So funny to be listening after so long, girl. The problem I'm gonna solve, you don't like music, am I wrong? I thought that after those 500 shows, I could fix it with this song. I'm not gonna get too sentimental about the way you sing that ever so slight. I just know that I'm waiting for the music of your voice every Sunday night. Alison, I know Nocilla's really you. Oh, Alison, my song is true. I saw you on screencasts online, and the way you clarify MacTag, that leaves me tied in knots. I'm even scared I'll catch your terminal disease from those chit-chats with Bart Bouchard. Sometimes I wish that I could stop Chuck from talking when I hear the snarky things he'll say. But then you always give back more than you get, and you know we'll stay subscribed that way. Alison, the castaways, they all love you. Oh, Alison, this song's for you. This song's for you. This song's for you. This song's for you.
Wow. I have to tell you, even though I'm not a regular listener to music, Elvis Costello's song Alison was one of my favorites as a young child, so this brought back great memories, John.
I can't believe your first contribution is this cool. And I do, of course, appreciate your comments about Chuck. For the listeners, there is a link to download John's music and script in .docx format in the show notes if you want to see the chords he was playing for that. All of these contributions warm my heart. We never knew when we started this journey together that the community would spring out of nothing, that Rose would name it the Nocilla Castaways, and that we would become such good friends. If you haven't been to the live show yet, I think you got a tiny bit of flavor for why it's not really about me creating the show. It's about the lifelong geeky friends you'll make in the chat room. But I think most of all, I'm happy that so many people mentioned Steve in their congratulations. I started this alone and figured it was my gig that I'd have to squeeze into our lives. But instead, Steve is the one who made room for it to exist. He makes dinner on Sunday nights. He brings me a beer. He reminds me to brush my hair. He turns on my LED light panel that he bought me, along with my backlighting. He flips my Podfeet pin over so that it's visible, hanging on the microphone and boom arm that he bought me. He takes the collar off of Tesla so she doesn't shake and make noise. He takes the phone out of the room. And he moderates the chat room to ensure that Switcher Mark doesn't shoot too many spitballs at me or Mike McPeak. And that's just for the live show. There are endless more things he does to make our videos from trade shows and to keep our life on track while I can dedicate my brain to making fresh content for you. I absolutely had no idea he would become such a big part of the show, and I thank him from the bottom of my heart. I don't like to let him get a word in edgewise, but he did send in our final contribution.
Hi, Allison. This is husband Steve. I'd like to congratulate you on completing 500 NoCillaCast episodes. What an accomplishment. When you began your podcast adventure back on May 13th, 2005, neither of us had any idea where it would take us. Since then, you've produced a podcast every week like clockwork for over 9.5 years. That's a rare feat in the podcasting community, and one of which you can be proud. Throughout this period, the NoCillaCast community has grown up around you, providing their support, content for your show, and a lot of good times. To commemorate the event, I wanted to capture how your show has evolved over the years, but I wasn't quite sure how to do it. Then, during our recent visit with Slough in New York, he mentioned something that caught my ear. He noted how you've delivered the word ever in your tagline, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias, with more and more emphasis over time. So I went back to the first NoCillaCast podcast and started listening to the introduction of your earlier and some of your later shows. And you know, Slough was right. So I made an audio compilation of your introductions, noting this and some of the other changes your introduction underwent over time. The first three clips I selected are excerpts of your show's introduction, starting with the first NoCillaCast in May 2005, followed by episodes from July and October of 2005.
Hi, this is Allison Sheridan, and welcome to the NoCilla Podcast, or NoCillaCast for short. NoCillaCast is a chronicle of the technology news that I glean from sources such as the Wall Street Journal, using Walter Mossberg's Technology Journal, Leo Laporte's radio, TV, and books on technology. I like Wired Magazine as a good source. I read PC and Mac magazines and various technology podcasts. By the way, I'm calling this the NoCillaCast because I'm dedicating it to my brother Kelly. My brother Kelly called me funny names, and he also believed that I could do absolutely anything. And I keep thinking of him when I thought I really want to do this, and I thought he would encourage me to do it. So I hope you tune in again, and today is May 13th, 2005. Welcome to the NoCillaCast, a high-tech podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh slant. Next time I plan on doing a review of the freeware and shareware that I use constantly, explain what kind of problems they solve for me. Hi, this is Allison Sheridan bringing you another episode of the NoCillaCast podcast, brought to you from the website podfeet.com. Today is Sunday, October 2nd, and this is show number 10. I finally have a real website with my own domain name, podfeet.com. One thing that can help me get more ideas for content is if you email me questions, suggestions, or ideas, and you can do that now at allison@podfeet.com. Oh, it's so much fun to finally have that address. I've been wanting to do it for so long.
The next three clips show how you fine-tuned your tagline and first added the Midnight Dialogue opening music to your introduction. The last clip in March 2006 was the first time you used your now well-known tagline in its final form.
Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSillaCast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a tech geek podcast with a slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, October 23rd, and this is show number 14.
Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSillaCast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com. Today is Sunday, January 15th, 2006, and this is show number 26. Well, what'd you think of that snazzy new intro? Can you tell that I got a new copy of iLife 06 with GarageBand, built-in podcasting, and a new microphone? Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSillaCast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, March 5th, 2006, and this is show number 33.
From the time you firmed up your tagline in March 2006, it took about a year for you to get the punch on the word ever as we know it today. The next three clips show how your emphasis on the word ever evolved from March 2006 to March 2007. I have to say, Slough was right on.
A technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias. A technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias. A technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias.
One of the ways you were able to produce a show every week for 500 episodes was through the help of three good friends who filled in for you when you were on vacation or otherwise disposed. They all had their unique style for saying your tagline during the show's introduction. The next three clips are from Katie Floyd, Alistair Jenks, and Bart Bouchotz, doing their part to keep the NoSillaCast going strong.
A technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias.
A technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias.
A technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias.
You know, Bart's emphasis on the word ever makes me chuckle every time. Of course, your show has evolved in many ways other than your introduction, including adding listener contributions in reviews, Dumb Question Corner, Chit-Chat Across the Pond, the live show with the NoSillaCast chat room, the iOS NoSillaCast app designed by Donald Burr, and a handful of sponsors. But looking back, I think the most significant development over these nearly 10 years is the new set of friends we've come to know because of your podcast. You and I consider many of these friends as close, even though we haven't met in real life. We've also traveled across the U.S., the Atlantic, and the Pacific to meet some of these friends. I know you've thoroughly enjoyed each one of these NoSillaCast meetups as much as I have. And I also know you look forward to many more meetups wherever they may take us. I'm so pleased you started and stayed with the NoSillaCast, for without it, just think of the friendships we'd be missing. So again, Allison, congratulations on achieving 500 wonderful episodes of the NoSillaCast. I'm extremely proud of what you've accomplished, and I'm very happy to see the NoSillaCastaways evolve into the thriving community that surrounds us today. That's it for now, and you can rest assured that I will stay subscribed.
Well, I have to say, I am overwhelmed by everyone. This has been an amazing journey. I want to thank all of you. Thanks to those of you who contribute in amazing and huge ways, like Bart and Alistair and Katie, who fill in for me while I'm gone. To all of you who have been guests on the show, even Guy Searle, and those of you who have done listener contributions, and also those of you who quietly download and listen and never make a peep. And most of all, to Steve for being the one who encourages me the most to get out there and make it happen. By the way, I was tempted to pretend that I was going to quit at 500 episodes, but I'm just not that mean, no matter what Switcher Mark has to say. I'm a big fan of the IRC client Textual from CodeUX.com to chat in the live chat room each week, so when they had a new version out on the Mac App Store, I was more than willing to buy it. However, I have a lot of chat rooms set up in there. I've got my own over on Donald Burr's server Board Chat, Tom Merritt's, Twit's, Mac Geek Guy's chat server. I don't want to take the risk that I'd lose all those configurations when I did the upgrade. Clarify to the rescue. I whipped it open, and I just took screenshot after screenshot to record each setting on each server. After just a few minutes, I had them all captured. Next, I indented each set so I could see visually which server I was looking for when the time came. I saved it all to Evernote, and I knew I had my belt and suspenders ready just in case. This is just one of a zillion uses I find for Clarify to help me remember things so I can save myself. Now, if you don't have Clarify yet, I think there's three of you left. Head on over to clarify-it.com and download the free trial. You can buy it in the Mac App Store or directly through them after that, and you can buy it for Mac or Windows or even a cross-platform version. Heck, there's bundle discounts, too. Buy one for the whole family. When you do, be sure to tell them that Allison sent you. Well, it's that time of the week again. It's time for Chit Chat Across the Pond. And for this 500th episode, who should we have on the show but Bart Bouchotts?
I am so happy that it worked out by accident that I'm on number 500.
Yeah, it's only right.
Well, that way I get to say congratulations on 500 shows and really well done.
Good. And in person, right?
And yeah, exactly. Well, I would have sent it in otherwise. But
there you go. You get to say it here. Well, should we just kick right in with Security Light? We got a lot of stuff on the docket today.
We have a big propeller beanie one, so I'd like to race through the security stuff.
Okay, I'll try to be uninterested then. Yeah, well, that's what always screws us up.
for 2015, I may rethink how we do this segment because it's starting to annoy me, and if it annoys me, I shouldn't do it.
Oh, I don't know. It's annoying you.
I need to find the new benchmark for what is and isn't in.
Oh, okay.
I need to find the new filter. You know, cause, you know, I read the same amount of news, and I still want to have something, but I need to recalibrate the filter so that there's less time spent saying, "Oh, Allison, don't be interested," because that's silly.
All right. Well, so we're starting our New Year's resolutions.
Yeah, only I haven't done it yet because this is still with the old filter.
Okay, sounds good. Well, I will attempt to be as interested as appropriate then.
Okay. So first up, we have our important updates. Adobe did an out-of-band flash. The fact that it's out-of-band tells you enough. So when it asks for an update it. And in fact, given how important flash is, maybe go and update it proactively, unless you're using Chrome, in which case, don't worry. You're fine.
You know, I found a setting in Chrome where you can essentially do what click to flash and those apps do, where you can actually just turn it off, too.
Yeah, and I think Safari can do that for certain types of plugins as well.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. I mean, I just, like, every time I go to Flash, it just goes, nope, not going to play that unless you tell me to. And all you do is click to Flash, essentially.
Yes, no, it's a really nice model, especially because most Flash stuff is stuff you really don't care about.
Exactly.
Okay, Apple have released an update to Safari for OS 10.8, 10.9, and 10.10. Again, since Safari is so internet-touchy, very important update. But also interesting that they are continuing to keep 10.8 protected, which is new, because usually they only keep one back.
Yeah, which one's 10.8? What's before Mavericks? Mountain Lion?
Yes, the last of the putty tats.
All right.
And then finally, another little PSA for our WordPress friends. I think the last time we had a PSA about Drupal having gone completely and utterly belly up, WordPress had a serious issue that was being exploited in the wild. So if you were on WordPress 3 rather than 4, you really, really, really need to update. Because it is being exploited in the wild, and that's just not good.
Now, this is the first time I've seen, I just got a notice from all of my websites saying, hey, we just updated WordPress for you. You're welcome.
Yeah, sometimes I think it's only when it's a security update that it emails you. I'm not quite sure what makes them send emails sometimes and not sometimes.
That was kind of fun.
Yeah, no, it's nice. And I like that WordPress can now sort of keep look after itself, because let's face it, we're all human and we all forget.
Yeah.
So that brings us into the news. Twitter has decided, well, since Twitter don't have a business model, Twitter's always going to be out to get us. And their latest genius idea is that why don't we tell advertisers every app you have installed on your device? That way they can target you better. They call it App Graph. And if you'd like to turn it off, there are instructions in the show notes.
Ew.
And really, yeah, until Twitter find a business model, they're going to keep making us cranky.
Yeah.
If only they had thought about it up front, but anyway, they didn't. Some good news, the CEO of the spyware app Stealth Genie was fined $500,000, which I think is fantastic that these kind of technically illegal but very highly available pieces of software are being chased down. So this was the thing, it was targeted at people who were suspicious of their spouses or and stuff like that. Where you would install it secretly on their phone and it would spy on them for you. And they were selling it.
You're kidding.
No, I'm deadly serious. And they weren't even, like, a lot of these things are sold, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. So in other words, this is a tool for, you know, keeping an eye on your kids, which is legal. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, what about your spouse? This case was just blatant. They were just advertising, you know, they had business plans and their target demographic was cheated on spouses. So they're, you know, bang to rights, and it's great to see prosecutors going after this kind of stuff.
Nice. Hey, back up really quick to the Twitter thing. Mm-hmm. It looks like it's only the official Twitter app on iOS or Android that does that. So if you're using Twitterific or Tweetbot or one of the others, it doesn't. That doesn't apply.
Yeah, because the other apps, of course, the third-party apps can't read. You know, only Twitter's own app can reach in to fetch stuff for Twitter.
You would think Apple would find that a little bit. I mean, since Apple sort of endorsed them.
Well, bear in mind that if you the way you turn it off on iOS is that you turn off iAds.
Mm.
Because iAds shares with the advertisers a profile on you based on non-personal stuff, including what apps you have.
I got you. Okay.
So the nice thing is I always have that checkbox off on all my iPhones. I never have iAds enabled. So I just didn't have to do anything, which was nice. I also don't use that app, so I didn't have to do anything twice. Something I thought we should mention, because it's actually pleasant, is that Google have had a rethink about captchas, and they now have what they call a no-captcha recapture.
I was on a Daily Tech News show, and that was our subject of discussion. Yeah, it's a very, very interesting idea. I think it'll be mostly valuable for people who can see. There's some parts of it I think won't work with screen readers, but the basic idea is that it's watching for things like your mouse movement and cookies, things that you've done before, to tell whether or not you're a bot. And the reason I'm a little curious about how it's going to work for the blind is if it's looking for mouse movements, you aren't going to find any, right? You're going to see these automated jumping from this to this to this that they do with the keystrokes, since they can't see the mouse. So I'm not sure how that'll work, but they have done some improvements in the recent past to the audio CAPTCHA. So even if you do still get caught by this CAPTCHA, you'll be better off, I think.
Yeah, and basically what they're using is all the metadata that's sort of floating around with humans and robots behave differently. And they're being a little bit coy about everything they're measuring, because obviously if they tell everyone what they're doing, then the bad guys will just make the robots do that. And I guess the algorithm's going to get tweaked, but they're not going to show you a CAPTCHA unless they're not sure. So basically they're going to look at what's going on and see if they're confident about your humanity. And if they're not sure, then they'll show you a CAPTCHA. They're also doing things like, rather than making it squidgy text, they show you one picture of like a cat or a turkey or something, and then a grid of 9 pictures, and they say, click on all the ones like the ones above and the one below. And so you'll have some cats and some dogs.
They showed that specifically on mobile. And of course, that again won't help the people who can't see.
Also, the reason they have to do that on mobile is because mobile doesn't have a mouse.
Right.
Right. Same problem.
So I have a feeling on mobile, if you're blind, you're going to get stuck either way. But
well, no, because the little audio button is there on all of the CAPTCHAs. I kept an eye out for that.
Right. But that's essentially making the blind do a CAPTCHA when the sighted don't have to. So you can tell it's a cat and say that's a cat, and you don't have to do a CAPTCHA, but the blind still would. I'm not saying they're
noises.
What's that?
As you move your mouse, as you click on each image, you can make it go meow or woof.
Oh, that! Yes, no. Well, now that would be interesting. There you go. You should write to them. I love that idea.
And then just the last, it's just in the show notes because it's such a big news story, is poor Sony. Well, maybe not poor Sony. Maybe they were asking for it by not doing security properly. But either way, oh my God.
Yeah, is there anything to say? I mean, if anybody's been under a rock, basically they had their internal network hacked.
Hacks.
Yeah. Now, one of the sad things, where maybe it's not poor Sony, is that they lost the home addresses and social security numbers of tens of thousands of employees.
And medical details. Because in America, you know, in America, your employer provides your health care. Your employer sort of has access to that information, and your employer can lose that information, which is terribly annoying.
My employer never had access to my healthcare information. That's not not a true
statement. They have to approve claims for you and stuff, don't they?
No, they have no involvement in that. They fund the insurance company that has access to that. But the,
so at the very least, there has to be a record saying what level of cover you guys all get and so forth.
Yeah, but it's not like you got that weird fungus you've been worried about. You know, it's not that.
Okay, but yeah, okay, but it's still, that's still healthcare information. It's okay, maybe it's healthcare metadata.
Maybe.
Rather than healthcare information. But that's kind of, you know, a lot of that got out. And what really, really I find horrible is that the attackers are now sending threatening emails to all the employees whose details they have, threatening their families, which is just charming.
Oh, God, I haven't seen that. We still don't know why they did it, do we?
No, not really. It would appear to be, apparently, the finger of suspicion is waving at the Koreans. Basically, I've stuck a list of one, two, three, about five links into the show notes. If people are interested, they can read along. It's a train wreck, and that's probably all we can say about it.
Yeah.
If you're... You know, if you're the CEO of a corporation, maybe take some time to have a word to your IT people about what resources they need.
I think the most disturbing thing I saw was the current VP of IT security was quoted in an interview a few years ago saying that he's not going to spend $100,000 or $1 million protecting a $10,000 problem. So, you know, basically it's worth the risk to just, you know, have the lawsuits.
I think where he went wrong there is with the $10,000 problem calculation.
I'm saying the number wrong, but it was basically a 10-to-1 ratio. He gave like a $100,000 problem with take $1 million to protect against a $100,000 problem. I don't think he realized it's not a $100,000 problem.
Yeah, that's what I mean. He got half of his risk equation wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
Notable breaches. The Canadian Revenue Agency gave us all a lesson in what not to do. They accidentally breached themselves by emailing tax records to journalists.
Oh, my God. Are you
just take the middleman out. Just give it straight to the journalists. Genius. I've no idea who these people are, but SP Plus is apparently a major operator of U.S. parking garages, and they had their point of sales terminals hacked, apparently mainly in the Chicago area. And then U.S. Retailer BB, which I think does clothes for ladies, they had their customer credit card data taken for, quote, the breach lasted several weeks last month, which I think means the Black Friday carry on, which is not good.
Hmm.
So suggested reading, lots in there, but I just want to highlight a few. If you're curious what all this browser fingerprinting malarkey is on about, Naked Security have a really good explanation. The New Yorker also have a really good article on HTML5, how the standard came about and why you should care. And I think most people, when they hear the first half, will go, I don't care. But trust me, you should read. It's really well written. It's interesting. An interesting one. So we talked a lot about Target last year when they sort of set records in breachiness. The credit card companies felt that Target hadn't done their bit in protecting the data. And obviously the credit card companies had to refund lots of people money from all that fraud. So they're trying to sue Target. And Target were saying, you can't blame us. And a judge went, actually, they can. And he's allowing that lawsuit to go ahead, which again puts that risk equation in Sony. I think everyone's going to have to revise it, because if Target are held liable for their insecurity for such a massive breach, just think what that means for other CEOs.
Well, I think there was actually a law change that said that if your security is lower than whatever is considered standard, or if you're worse than everybody else or something like that, mm-hmm. I'm missing the – but the point is that it does make it possible to sue in this case.
Well, I think negligence is probably a word that marches into the conversation at some
stage. One would hope, yeah. Well, and that it is negligent to not have security at least as good as what's available.
Yeah, which seems reasonable to me, but of course I'm no lawyer. something to watch. I'm not sure it's going anywhere, but it might. If it does, Senator Ron Wyden from Oregon has introduced a bill that would make it illegal for the U.S. government to force companies to install backdoors. Don't know if it'll pass through Congress, but it's in train, so it's one to watch.
You go, girl.
I don't think Ron Wyden's a girl.
I know, but you know, you go, boy, doesn't work.
No, that's true. Good luck to him. Fingers crossed. Intego also have some very timely 6 tips for staying safe while doing your online holiday shopping. So that may be of interest to people. And finally, just for fun, Naked Security explain integer overflows, which sound very boring, in a fun and interesting way. So those are the ones to highlight in the suggested reading. And there's, bucket loads of bad news in there too.
Oh, like joy.
Gallons of it, but I'll leave that out. I want to get on to the fun stuff.
Okay, do we get to get on to the fun stuff then?
Let us have fun.
Okay, I got my propeller beanie out 2 weeks ago. You said to brush it off and get it ready because we're going to tighten it up.
Yeah, have it wound up there. That elastic needs to be good and tight.
All right.
Okay, so we are moving. So the last time we did a Taming the Terminal, we looked in detail at the Ethernet layer. So at layer one of our four-layer stack. And this week we're moving up a step. So we're heading up to IP. And so just a reminder that the four layers are, you have the link layer that gets one packet from one computer to another computer on the same network. Then you have the internet layer that gets one packet from one computer on any network to another computer on any other network. And then you have the transport layer on top of that, which takes meaningful streams of data between any two computers. And then finally, the application layer is where like the HTTP and the email and all the things we actually want to do hang out.
So where does IP layer go, or where does IP go? What layer is that on?
So that is the second of those two. So the internet layer is for getting one packet from one computer anywhere on the internet to another computer anywhere else on the internet. Okay. And obviously, that's the one that makes it possible to have TCP and UDP send meaningful streams of data the next layer up. So in the IP layer, it's probably no surprise to anyone that IP addresses are king.
Okay.
An IP address, for anyone who's not familiar with it, is we generally see them written down as four numbers separated by full stops, or periods, as you guys call them. And each of those four numbers has to be between 0 and 255. So an IP address can't have 356 in it or something like that.
I like to as explain IP address as being like your house address. I can refer to this as Allison's house, but nobody knows where that is unless they know the address. Same thing with a computer. You don't know that a server, you don't know it's bartb.ie unless you know the IP address.
Right. And we're going to look in a future installment at a guess probably around about 30. At the magic that makes that possible, which is DNS. But we're not. Right. We need to climb up the stack a little bit more because DNS sits up in layer four and we're still in layer two. We haven't managed to get a packet across yet.
Total non sequitur to make sure we don't make our budgeted time. If you go into Google and you just type IP, it'll tell you your public IP address.
Oh, that's handy. There's also whatsmyip.com, which.
I've always gone to IP Chicken, but all you got to do is Google.
Chicken?
Oh, yeah. IP okay. Chicken's awesome. I mean, it's got a chicken.
Who tells you your IP?
Yes.
Okay.
What's wrong with that? It tells you what browser you're using and a couple other things and advertises razor blades. So.
Yeah, a lot of these services are just there to make, they're just excuses to put up ads, really.
But hey, that's fun. It's got a chicken.
Exactly. Yeah, no, it's good. So an example might be 192.168.0.1. Now, unlike MAC addresses, your IP address is not hard-coded into your network card. So a MAC address is burnt in, but an IP address is not, so it has to be configured. And historically, that was a manual process. You would have to figure out an IP address and a few other bits of information and type them all in, and then your computer would talk on your home network. And usually it wouldn't because you did something wrong, or at least that was my experience. In the modern age, we have the luxury of something called the Dynamic Host Configuration Protocol, or DHCP. And I'm just going to mention its existence today because that's how your computer has magically got an IP address without you ever having to think about it. Next time, we're going to look at how DHCP does its magic because, of course, it's not magic. It's just technology. But for today, we're just going to mention that that's how the settings we're going to see have arrived. They weren't made up by your computer. They were made up by your router and given to your computer.
And this is the part where I get a chance to yet again mention that I actually know one of the authors of DHCP.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, it was a friend of mine I used to work with.
Although DHCP suffers from the same thing Ethernet suffers from. There's no security at all.
Well, it's pretty old.
I know. It's from the age of, oh my God, it works. Wow.
Oh, simpler times.
Now, you can't just pick an IP address. Okay, so there are a finite number of IP addresses because you have 255.255.255.255. You multiply it out, it's millions, but it's not infinite. And so those names are managed, or sorry, those IP addresses are managed by the rather interestingly named Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers, better known to everyone as ICANN.
Right.
So ICANN assign blocks of IP addresses to people who need blocks of IP addresses. You, me, none of us really are likely to own any IP addresses. So what we end up using is there are three special blocks of IP addresses that are designated as allowed to be used on private networks. And so just about all of our home networks use one of these three available chunks of IP addresses. And so they are 10.0.0.0 all the way up to 10.255.255.255. That is a spectacularly large range. There's the almost never used 172.16.0.0 to 172.31.255.255. And the one that routers not made by Apple love, 192.168.0.0 up as far as 192.168.255.255.
That's interesting. Why don't they use 172?
It's kind of a... I think you'll understand why later, but I can't tell you why now.
Okay.
It's not completely nonsense.
Okay.
Also, the 10 addresses are the prettiest. The 192 addresses are the most common.
Right.
You may also come across two other blocks of IP addresses. There's the 127.0.0.0 all the way up to 127.255.255.255, and that's all reserved for the loopback address. Now, that's a complete total and utter waste, because almost every computer has a grand total of one loopback IP, 127.0.0.1. So we have wasted millions of IP addresses, because when we made this up years ago, we never thought there'd be so many people looking for an IP address.
Yeah, that's a lot wasted.
It is a big lot wasted. Another fairly substantial amount of wasted addresses are the 169.254.0.0 up to 169.254.255.255 addresses, which have been wasted basically by Microsoft. Those are the ranges for self-signed IP addresses.
Why is that Microsoft's fault?
Who else implements self-signed IPs?
Well, what do you mean? If I mess up, if my router doesn't actually make a connection to the internet, I'm going to get a 169, so I'm not touching Microsoft.
Do Macs do that too?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I've never seen my Mac do it. I thought it was something that just Windows did.
No, I've definitely seen it. I remember, okay. Haven't seen it in years, but I remember looking in the network control panel and seeing a 169 going, well, that means I don't have an internet connection.
It does, actually, and that is indeed the takeaway. We have skipped straight to the takeaway. If you see one of those, something's gone wrong. That's really the reason I'm mentioning them. Okay, so what IP gives us above Ethernet is the ability to move from one network to another network to another network and basically to send one packet across the internet. And so this act of figuring a way from here to there is known as routing. And the vast majority of the heavy lifting and routing is done by routers, unsurprisingly. And as such, it's not really something we're going to talk about in this entire series. It's really cool, and it's very interesting if you're curious, but I don't think it's a topic for us.
Okay.
However, each and every device that uses IP does a teeny tiny amount of routing all by itself. And that teeny tiny amount of routing can be summed up as one question. Is the destination IP address for this packet on my local network or not? And so every time your computer sends an IP packet, it has to answer that question, because that tells it how it should treat the packet. So if the answer is yes, it's local, then it sends it direct. So it uses ARP, like we talked about last week, to turn the IP address into a MAC address, and it sends it direct to the destination. If the answer is no, this is not local, then it uses ARP to find out the MAC address of your router and hands the packet to your router and then leaves it for your router to do the routing magic.
Oh, I think I missed a step there. So you're saying if the IP address I ask for is external to the network, that's when it says, okay, go to the router and send it out.
Exactly. So okay. Is it local? Yes. Then find the MAC address and send it myself. Is it local? No. Find the MAC address of the router and send it to the router and let the router deal with it. But you have to be able to make that decision or you cannot communicate over IP. And being able to make that decision is actually what this entire segment is about.
Oh, okay.
Because being able to make that decision is actually asking the question, are you on my subnet or not? That's what it means to be on a subnet. Do I need a router to get to you?
Oh, okay.
If we share a subnet, no router needed. If we don't share a subnet, router needed. And so really, a subnet is just the IP word for a local network.
Say that one more time.
So a subnet is just the word that the IP protocol gives to what we would call a LAN.
Okay.
It's a bunch of logically related IP addresses that can talk to each other without the help of a router. So, a subnet is a collection of IP addresses, but there's a little more to it than that. So for a subnet to work, all of the IP addresses on that subnet have to share an Ethernet network. So they all have to be able to talk to each other without the help of a router. So you can't have one Ethernet, one IP subnet spread over two Ethernet networks. Well, I'll say you can't. However, so you might think, well, that means, okay, so there's exactly one subnet for every Ethernet network. But that's not true either, because you can have lots of IP networks sharing one physical network.
I'm losing this. You're this losing apparently me. Has some subtlety going on here, but it's turning into word jumble for me, I'm afraid.
Okay. So last time we learned that using the magic of switches and hubs, that you can send an Ethernet packet around any computers that are physically connected together or are being connected together by a little Wi-Fi radio called a wireless access point. And as long as an Ethernet packet can make it from one to the other, then they're on the same Ethernet network.
Right.
An IP subnet has to share an Ethernet network. Everyone who's on the subnet has to be able to send an Ethernet packet to everyone else who's on the subnet.
Okay. It seems kind of obvious, but all right.
Okay. It is kind of obvious, but I just thought we should state it.
Okay.
However, you can have multiple IP addresses, multiple IP subnets on one Ethernet network.
Multiple IP subnets on... Sure.
Right. So you could have two logical networks on one physical network.
Okay. Sure. You might if you had a small business.
Yeah. Exactly. You could have one set of IP addresses used for one thing and a completely different set of IP addresses used for something else. But rather than having two sets of everything... and two wires, just run them all on the one wire, and that's perfectly fine.
Okay.
However, home users, it's a one-to-one mapping usually. So, in order to figure out how all this magic happens, we need to realize that those four dotted things that we're used to seeing, so where 192.168.0.1, they're called dotted quads, by the way, that's their official name.
Ooh.
Those are actually not really what an IP address is. Those are the human-friendly representation of an IP address. What's really happening is that IP addresses are 32-bit binary numbers.
Hmm.
So they are 32 ones and zeros in a row. And I have done the math, and I can tell you that 192.168.0.1 is 11000... Yeah,
please don't read that out.
No. So we know that every IP address is 32 ones or zeros long. And to make a subnet, we arbitrarily choose a point between 0 and 32, and we draw a line and we say, we're going to say that everything to the left of this line has to stay the same in my subnet, and everything to the right can vary. And we can draw that line anywhere, but the point is we divide those 32 bits into two halves. They're not halves, they can be any size, into two parts. If we put the dividing line way, way, way close to the left, then you're going to have like millions of IP addresses in your subnet. And if you put the dividing line way, way, way over to the right, you're going to have like four. So you got to sort of pick, you know, am I Enron or am I on a home network? And that will tell you whether you want a gigantic subnet or a teeny tiny subnet.
I lost you. So I'm looking at the binary number that's got a gazillion characters there. And you're saying where I divide that changes how many IP addresses I have, but I only get from 0 to 255 in each of those quads, right?
You do in each of those quads, but remember, the quads are an abstraction to help us humans. In reality, those quads are meaningless. What actually matters is the binary, and you can split it anywhere.
But how can I split... I still can't make I want to call them quadcopters. I still can't... split the dotted quads up any differently than up to 255 in each quad, right?
Actually, you can. It just means that it doesn't you can't see what's happening at a decimal level. I'm hoping it will make more sense in a minute.
Okay.
You can draw the line anywhere because they really are binary numbers, so you really can draw the line anywhere. And so all machines on an IP subnet share the first N parts of their IP address the same. So they all have the same starting point. And then the last bit wobbles about. And how much you let wobble and how much you're forced to be fixed determines the size of your subnet.
Okay.
So 192.168.0.1, 192.168.0.2, they share an awful lot in common. So they're likely to be on the same subnet.
Okay.
Now, ultimately, all of this comes down to some mathematics. So, right. But the way we say where to put this imaginary dividing line, the way we tell the computer where the line is by specifying something called a net mask.
I've heard that word my whole geek life, and I have no idea what the NetMask is.
Good. That's NetMasks are really what we're going to talk about today, because NetMasks are what make the magic happen.
Okay.
So a NetMask is a way of representing where you've chosen to draw the line. And the NetMask is also saved as 32 bits of binary. And there's a rule on a NetMask, and you can't just pick any 32 bits and call them a NetMask. There's a really, really strict rule. It has to start with all ones and end with all zeros. And at the point where you switch from ones to zeros, that's the dividing line. So if you want your dividing line way close to the start, you might have 16 ones and then 16 zeros. If you want your dividing line the other side, you might have 24 ones and 8 zeros. But our imaginary dividing line is defined by how many ones and then how many zeros in the NetMask.
Okay.
So we have two binary numbers, an IP address and a NetMask.
Right.
Store those away. We're now going to do some very, 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 very simple Boolean algebra. Sorry. So I need to... Okay. I say I need to teach you. I know you know this, but we're going to go through it anyway. So there is this concept of an AND operation.
Mm-hmm.
And an AND operation can be defined by something called a truth table 4 lines long. So 0 and 0 is 0. 0 and 1 is 0. 1 and 0 is 0. 1 and 1 is 1. That's the rule.
Okay.
So we take our IP address, that's 32 ones and zeros. And we take our NetMask, that's 32 ones and zeros. And we do an AND.
Okay. And every single
computer on the same subnet as you will get the same answer.
Hmm.
And if you get a different answer, they're not on your subnet. And that is actually what your network card is doing. It is doing that little simple bit of binary math. So I have the source and I have the destination. I take my MAC address and myself and I get an answer. I take my NetMask and the destination IP address. If I get a different answer, I have to give it to the router. If I get the same answer, I can send it directly. And I know I've lost you. And I know I've confused people. We're going to use examples to pull it back together. So
I like how you know me well enough that if I'm not saying anything, it means I've got a really weird look on my face.
Right. So I'm going to tell you an algorithm we are going to use. So if I am a computer and I want to send an IP packet to another IP address, and I have to figure out, are you local or are you foreign? I know my MAC, I know my IP address, and I know my NetMask, and I know the IP address I'm trying to send to. They're my three pieces of information. Okay. Yeah. Let's actually ask a simpler question. I should have read ahead, sorry.
Do you want me to
We're going to answer a very important question. Are two computers on the same subnet? So you may ask yourself, I have my computer and I have Steve's computer. Are they on the same subnet? And the way you would answer that question is by saying, Steve, tell me your IP address and your NetMask. And ask your computer, what is my IP address and my NetMask? If the two NetMasks are different, the two computers are definitely not on the same subnet.
So why do I have to do that AND thing?
What if the two NetMasks are the same?
Right.
Then you have to go further.
Oh, okay. So the first test is, are they the same? If they're not the same, you know they're not on the same network. But if they are the same, then you've got to go a step further and do the AND thingy.
That is it exactly. So there's only one NetMask in play, and so you do an AND between your IP and the NetMask, and you save the answer. You do an AND between Steve's IP and the NetMask, and you save the answer. If the answers are the same, congratulations, you're on the same subnet. You can talk directly to each other. If the answer is different, you need a router to get between yourselves, and some stuff may not work the way you expect, but we'll get back to that later.
In my work history was where I saw a lot of NetMask stuff flying back and forth, mm-hmm. not knowing what it was, and it was always 255.255.255.0.
That's a really common one.
So that first test is sort of like, you might get lucky and it be the same or different and get the answer quicker.
Well, we'll get back to those nice, friendly NetMasks that have zeros in them. They're nice, and we'll see why they're nice in a minute.
I forget. Did you already tell me how the NetMask gets assigned, and I missed it?
DHCP gives it to you.
DHCP gives it to me.
In other words, whoever runs your router has configured your router in a certain way, maybe the default it came with.
Okay, so Apple defined it for me.
Correct. Yes, exactly. Okay. So Apple defined it for you.
Okay. And it's probably 255.255.
Yeah, and it's probably 3 255s and then a zero.
Okay, so this is probably where the fascination of the topic breaks down on the local, on the home network, but becomes more important in the real world.
Okay, so we're going to get back to those nice friendly ones with zeros because they rock.
Okay.
And they're easy. But before we get to the easy, they're a special case.
Okay.
So before we get to the special case, I'm going to give you general relativity and then we'll do special relativity later.
Okay. Okay. Beanie's getting tight.
Yeah, no. Let's get practical. So I'm going to define three computers as existing. Computer A has the IP address 192.168.0.3.
Okay.
With a netmask of 3255s and then 248. And that is a legal netmask. It has no zeros, but it's perfectly legal.
Okay.
Computer B is the same IP address, but a 5 on the end.
Okay. So dot same 3 netmask. And dot 5.
And then the computer C is dot 9, but with the same netmask again.
Okay. So they all have the same netmask. They're 192.168.0.3, 5, and 9.
Correct. So the question is, do these three computers share a subnet or not? So the first step is we got to change them from these human-readable 192 blah, blah, blahs into their ones and zeros. Okay. I'm going to ask you to take it on faith that I know how to do that.
No, and take me through the math. I want to go through every digit.
you can... Actually, there's loads of converters online, and the algorithm is not difficult. It's just tedious.
Okay.
So I have done the conversions, and you can see them in the show notes, and I really would like you to look in the show notes because I've done them in a fixed-width font so they line up, because that's important, because this is all about patterns that our human eyes will just see the pattern and go, ah!
Oh, okay.
So we have our three IP addresses, and as you could probably guess from the dotted quads, when you put them into binary, they look very similar to each other.
Right, right.
It's just the last few bits are different. And then we have the netmask, and it's almost all ones, and just three little zeros in the end. And I've perfectly chosen a small netmask so that when I go break it down later, I don't have to write out thousands of lines in my table.
Okay.
So I have intentionally picked a small network. Your home network is probably bigger. So if we do our math and then we do the three answers, we can see them below. So IPA and the netmask gives us one string of ones and zeros. IPB and the netmask gives us another string of zero, ones and zeros, and IPC and the netmask gives us a third. And what you will see when you're, again, fixed with font, you look down through them and A and B are identical and C is different.
Hmm.
So A and B share a subnet. C needs a router to get there.
I'm sorry. I just realized. So at the beginning, we said the netmask was the same. That's the case where you look to see is the netmask the same and it says yes, then you must do further math. And this is the further math.
Yes. So here, so our netmask for everyone, everyone's netmask is the same. It's 3255s and 248s.
Okay. Okay. So when you apply that netmask against those IP addresses, you get the same answer for A and B, but the third computer gets a different, what is that final number called?
It's the net address, actually.
Okay.
What it is. When you take an IP address and it with a netmask, you get a net address.
Is this the whole purpose of the netmask, or is this a byproduct of netmask?
No, this is the whole purpose. A netmask, IP plus netmask equals net address. If your net address is the same, you're on the same subnet. If your net address is different, you're not. That is actually what's going on in one sentence. So we can see that A and B share a network, but C does not. So let's write out all of the IPs between 192.168.0.0 and 192.168.0.9 and our netmask, one under the other, so we can watch the pattern. And to make it clearer what's going on, I have added the imaginary divider in as the pipe character.
So it's visually easier.
So it's visually obvious. So if you look at the very bottom line of the table, you can see that the pipe character is where the ones go to zeros. So our netmask is lots and lots of ones, imaginary divider, three zeros. Okay?
Okay.
And then we can start to look up. So from IP 0.0 all the way down to 0.9, and what's happening? Well, 0.0 and 0.1 and 0.2 all the way up to 0.7 are all exactly the same as each other as far as the imaginary line.
Right.
After the imaginary line, they're all different.
Okay.
8 and 9 are not the same as all the others.
Okay.
They have a 1 just before the imaginary line, where all the others have a 0 just before the imaginary line.
Right.
Therefore, they are not, they are aliens. They are not on the same network. If you're on the same network, you are identical up to the dividing line defined by your net mask.
So in our first example, they were identical. Now you're talking about identical only up to that magic separator?
Right. So I've included 2 IP addresses that are not part of this subnet to show you what happens.
No, but I mean in our previous example where we had networks A, B, and C. Or
okay, so A, B, and C are all in this diagram. So A is 3, B is 5, and C is 9. So you can see that A and B have the same.
So they don't have to be identical.
No, they are identical up to the imaginary dividing.
But when you did the math up above, they were identical. The entire, every digit
okay, that's
was the same.
And. The and is identical. So I'm just showing you what the and means.
Okay, lost you. So we did the okay. And and we got this big, long, giant number. Now you got a different big, long, giant number? Well, how'd you get this one?
Okay, no, those are not big. Those are just the IP addresses written as ones and zeros.
No
math.
No, so you have a line, and I apologize for those who aren't
okay.
looking.
No.
It really will help to look. You gave us the ones and zeros for their IP addresses. Then you
yes.
applied the net mask.
Yes, with the and. So that's
with
that's
the and.
Those are the numbers in the 3.
And networks A and B came out exactly the same when the net mask was applied with the and.
Correct.
They're identical.
Yes.
Now you're doing something else because they're no longer identical.
Okay.
They're identical up to that line.
Okay. So what I'm showing in that table is not the result of the ands. It's just the raw IP addresses on the raw net mask. And what you can see is that that and being the same, what that really means is that the first bit is identical. There are 2 ways of seeing the same information. So you can do the math or you can look at the picture. If you do the math, you will find out that from 0 to 7 are the same. Or, being humans, we can look at the IP addresses written down as ones and zeros and look at the MAC address, and we can get the same result by looking at the patterns.
No idea what the difference between those 2 tables are, Bart.
Okay, so what I have written down in the bottom table is just the IP address. I've done no math. I've just written down the IP addresses as ones and zeros.
Oh, okay, I thought you were saying that about the upper one. I was like, no, it has a net mask on it. You're talking about the lower one. Got you.
So the lower one is the raw data. And so we humans can actually look at the raw data and see what's going on without ever doing the math. But of course, computers do math.
So if the last 3 digits are different, but every other digit is the same, then they're on the same subnet?
Assuming your net mask is 3 zeros in the end. If your net mask was different, more of you would share the same subnet. So imagine that dividing line. Imagine if I moved that dividing line over by 1.
Mm-hmm.
Then okay. the net mask would get 4 zeros on the end.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, I could have lots more variation on the end. I now
oh.
have 4 bits
oh, that's what you
with.
Were saying. Yeah. Okay, little light bulb flickered there.
Right. So there I get, right now there's 8 addresses in my range. 8 times 8 is 64. If I move that over by 1, I'd get 64. If I move it over by 2, I'd get 64 times 64. It gets exponential pretty quick.
Okay.
So every click over, you square it. Click over, square it again. Click over, square it again.
Huh. Okay.
So the reason I did both is because the math is what the computer does. Are they the same when I do the math? Yes, therefore they're the same. But humans work much better on pictures. So the table is to show the humans what the math means.
I like it. Light bulb fully on.
Phew. Okay, that is actually the single most... That is the one thing I have been most worried about the entire Taming the Pheromone series.
Well, I'm glad I got appropriately stuck for a while, so it showed it was hard.
This is the peak. It's easier from here.
Okay.
And that goes for the entire series.
Over the top.
So now that we know that we create a subnet by making this imaginary dividing line with our net mask that's just a load of ones and then some zeros, inside a subnet, what's going on? So I'm going to take the same subnet, the one we get from 192.168.0.0 as the network address and 255.255.255.248 as the net mask, which is conveniently 8 IP addresses long. That way I don't have to write a big table.
Okay.
So, the very first address in every single subnet, no matter how big or small it is not for you to use. Right?
All these worlds are yours except for IO.
Right? Exactly. So the very, very first address in any subnet is called the network address. and it becomes important later. And you may not use it for a computer or any other device. It is verboten. It is off, not allowed. The very last address is also verboten, but for a different reason. The very last address is called the broadcast address. And if you send an IP packet to that IP address, it is sent to every single IP address in the subnet.
Yeah. Okay.
That also becomes really important later.
What's to keep you from picking that address when you're saying, I want a static IP here, and just saying, I'm going to use that one?
Assuming your operating system was well-written, it'll go bonk and say, oh, no, you don't. But if it wasn't well-written, it may let you, and then nothing will work.
Well, it's not in my OS. It'd be in my settings for my router.
Only if you're using the HTTP, in which case your router will go bonk.
Really?
Your router won't let you type in an IP address 345, or your router won't let you do something wrong.
Huh. Okay.
Because your router knows how IP works. And if you tell your router garbage, your router will go, nope.
Well, in the example you've given, it's that broadcast address is at 192.168.0.7. That seems like it would be real easy to run into, except for you using kind of an odd net mask.
Right, so the broadcast address only, right, you can't look at a broadcast address without looking at the netmask.
To see which one's the broadcast address.
Right, so it does not mean that on every network on the planet that address is verboten. It just means that if my netmask is 248, I may not use that IP. If my netmask was 255.255.255.0, then I could use 7.
Okay.
Because it's not the last. So it's not that the IP is magic, it's the combination of the two. It's the last network, it's the last address in a subnet that's important, not the specific IP, because if we move our imaginary slider about, we can tinker with that to our heart's content. So it's first is not allowed and the last is not allowed.
Interesting, okay. I think I'm starting to get this. Now, I could never recite it later, but I think I'm starting to get it.
Well, we're going to tie it all together in a picture.
Okay.
That maybe you're going to want to print out and hang on your wall. That's a. I'm so hopeful, right? I'm hopeful that you're going to want to.
I mean, it's the kind of artwork anybody would want, right?
Right. Now, we have left something really important out, not in terms of the complexity here, but in terms of humanness, right? So we are looking at these netmasks as these horrible big 1111111100000. That's not practical, right? So we need to find a short way of writing them. The good news is, we have a really short way of writing them. The bad news is we have three of them. No one decided, like, there's only one way to write an IP address. So you'd imagine there'd only be one way to write a netmask. But for some earthly reason, computer science decided we needed three. And annoyingly, the terminal uses one, and the OS X system preferences uses another. So I kind of have to tell you all three. I'm sorry.
Okay.
So the easiest to remember is the one that looks like an IP address. Or the good old-fashioned dotted quads. Okay, so the first of them is the dotted quad. We know that one already from IP addresses. That's easy. The second one is bloody annoying, and it's the one that OS X uses on the terminal. I wish it didn't, but it does. So you can write binary numbers. Like a string of ones and zeros can be shortened if you take every four ones and zeros and convert them to a hexadecimal character. Now, hexadecimal characters are 0 to 9, A to F. So you break those 32 ones and zeros, divide by 4, gives you 8. Yes, gives you 8 hex characters. So you can write a netmask as 8 hex characters. If, in case you care, R1 is all 5 Fs and an 8 on the end. 7 Fs and an 8 on the end.
By the way, just as a quick interlude, I've always found it fascinating that you can write these with hexadecimal characters all with the left hand for the characters.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if it's a coincidence, but I always found it handy.
It's a pure coincidence because it's just the first 6 letters of the alphabet, A, B, right. C, D, E, F.
Yeah.
Pure coincidence.
Anyway.
One small thing to say, in computer science world, the number 0 followed by a lowercase letter x is the universal symbol for I'm about to talk hex at you. So when you see it in the OS X terminal, it will be 0x and then your Fs and so forth.
Oh, yeah, I have seen that. I didn't know what that meant.
There you go. So zero. Whenever you see 0x, think, they're talking hex at me. The final way of doing it is the shortest of all and the one I wish everyone would use. So if we look, scroll back up, right, to our netmask, it's a load of ones and then a load of zeros. The shortest way to write a netmask is to count the ones.
Okay.
So a net mass can be represented as one number between 0 and 32. So if you see a net mask as just 24, that means 24 ones and 8 zeros, which happens to be 255.255.255.0.
Oh.
In other words, the one you know so well is slash 24.
Oh, nice.
And 255.255.00, which is also common, is 16.
Huh.
So they are the three ways of writing an IP address. They're not horrible, except for the hex. Hex is evil. For completeness, I've stuck into the show notes the table to go from 0 to F in terms of binary.
Mm-hmm.
I don't expect people to learn it off, but I
So we don't have to print that one for our walls.
No. So how do you represent a subnet? You represent it by writing down two pieces of information with a slash between them. Network address, which is the first IP address of the subnet, forward slash the net mask, which means you can write it in three ways. So the example we've been using all along can be written as 192.168.0.0 slash 255.255.255.248. Or the, my favorite way, 192.168.0.0 slash 29. 29 ones, three zeros in the end. Or the way I hate most, but the way OS X will insist on doing it, 192.168.0.0 slash 0xFFFFFFFF8.
I always thought that was color, because isn't a bunch of Fs, it's like either black or white?
All Fs will be white. If they come in sixes, then it will be HTML colors, yeah. So ultimately, an entire subnet can be represented with an IP address forward slash a net mask, and that represents universally a subnet.
All right.
And we have run low on time, which... Do we have 5 minutes to get to the picture I want you to print on your wall, or do we stop here and be a real tease?
Well, I say we go for a tease, because we're at 50 minutes, and I think we should tease it, Bart.
We should tease
it. It's a nice chart.
Okay, in that case, the way I'm going to end is this. We have now learned what's really happening, right? It is this binary AND operation going on.
Right.
And I told you we could... Any amount of ones is allowed. So in other words, a slash 1 up to a slash 27, they're all allowed. But in the real world, they fall into a subset of very common ones. And they're really friendly ones that make your life easy and make you not have to do binary, because they work by always using even numbers of fours, basically, so that the decimal quads that us humans like map nicely to the binary so that we never have to use the binary. And so one of those is our 255.255.255.0, but there's two more. And what I have done is a flowchart where you can look at a MAC address. Sorry, not. I keep saying MAC address. You can look at an IP address and a netmask, and answering yes or no questions, find out if they're in the same subnet or not, purely by looking at them written out in the nice decimal form.
Oh, cool. Except we're not going to show it to him yet.
Except we're not going to show it until next week. Okay, and then what I will say then, so... We're going to take it a step further next week, and no, I'm just going to leave it at that. Yeah.
All right. Well, I hope people can remember for 2 weeks, because this was a tight one, but the show notes are spectacular. If you guys aren't following them over to bartb.ie and looking at part 25 of N, that kind of thing, you really should be doing it, because it makes a lot more sense when you look at this too.
There's also another bonus if you look at the show notes. You get to see what I'm teasing.
Ah, ooh, oh no, people are going to go see the picture. They might print it early.
Anyway, congratulations again on 500. That's such a spectacular achievement. And please don't podfade anytime soon.
Thank you so much, Bart. Absolutely would not have done it without you. No doubt.
Well, thank you. I don't believe you, but thank you. Okay, well, until next time, I suppose I should say happy computing, really, shouldn't I?
Oh, go ahead and say it then.
Okay, then. Until next time, happy computing.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this virtual high five for 500 shows and will stick around for a long time with us. I'm going to be sure to keep making shows as long as you stay subscribed. Thanks to the makers of Clarify over at clarify-it.com and to Hover for your domain names at hover.com. Don't forget to send in your dumb questions, comments, and suggestions. Haven't had a lot of dumb questions lately. Maybe you guys are all smart now. You haven't got dumb questions. Anyway, you can send those to me at allison@podfeet.com. Follow me on Twitter and app.net @podfeet. Do check out the NoSillaCast Google Plus community. We have so much fun over there. It's a blast. And I have to give that another shout out to the live chat room. That's where we had a huge party tonight. And you can do that yourself by going to podfeet.com/live on Sunday nights at 5 p.m. Pacific time and join the friendly and enthusiastic NoSilla Castaways. Thanks for listening and stay subscribed.